This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I feel like in Houston, they should just tell us when we're not under a flash flood warning. That would be easier. I'm just going to assume we're under a flash flood warning all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, and then they can be like, hey, today, no flash flood warning. I'll be like, okay, good. And leave my house comfortably.
Driving past one of those massive retention ponds in Pearland this morning.
Yeah.
It's a lake all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But it's nice. It's usually a nice green field. I always think, oh, I could set up a tent out there and go camping.
We have a gigantic one in the middle of our subdevelopment. I thought about buying a jet ski just for when it rains. Just kind of zipping around in the middle of the neighborhood and the muddy, nasty retention pond.
Pearland has an impressive system of retention ponds.
We're lucky. It's the anti-Friendswood.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of our water drifts down to Friendswood. That's what happens.
Sorry, Friendswood.
Sorry about that. We didn't set it up that way.
I don't want to speak out of turn here. There was an issue with one of these towns' floodgates or the something.
Are you afraid of offending a...
I'm afraid of getting sued if I say the wrong town or something.
Yeah, then don't do that.
But there was a sewage issue. Like one of these towns that has a really, really good system, but it failed and all that sewage went dumping down towards Clear Lake Airway. Yeah.
All the things to fail.
Yeah. That was a while back. That's not like this morning or anything.
Speaking of sewage, Eli Manning was benched yesterday. It was announced yesterday that Daniel Jones is going to be the starter for the New York Giants, to which I say, bravo, Giants. You're only like 4 years late to the prom. Eli should have been benched a long time. He should have been taken out to pasture a long, long time
ago. It's been three seasons that his arm has just been really,
it's
really
been terrible.
Suspect, right. That was why it was so. I feel like the Texans are single-handedly responsible for at least giving him as many more starts as he's had because of what Eli did last year versus the Texans.
He was good in week three.
Well, he was carving it up to wide open receivers underneath. He was doing, if you let his brain go to work, he's a good, smart veteran quarterback. If you play a bunch of zone against him and give him wide open receivers, he's going to take advantage of you. It's that if you rely on his arm at all, it's been for a few years now, he's not going to do it with his arm.
Right.
And it's been obvious to everybody outside of the Giants organization. The only curious thing last year was that when they benched him for Geno Smith. That was the weird thing. It's one thing to bench him for somebody that's a viable potential starter. That was just the strange thing.
They're still digging out from underneath the rubble, the PR rubble of benching him under McAdoo 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That may be what you're referring to.
2 years ago is what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was like, because it ended his consecutive game streak.
Yeah.
And, man, I've never seen a star play.
They gave him a makeup just to make up for benching him.
A whole season.
They gave him a whole season.
A whole season. Now you
this
wind
is
up.
Worse. This is like the Kobe Bryant contract
yes.
at the end.
Yeah.
Where they gave Kobe this huge contract for no reason at all other than, hey, thanks for everything.
100%. And here's my frustration with this whole thing. And I know Eli was a two-time Super Bowl MVP. I get it. Kobe was at least a good basketball player. Like, Kobe was a perennial all-star who you can, with a straight face, say he's one of the top 10, 15 at most, players in the history of the game. I don't even know if Eli is one of the top 15 quarterbacks of this decade.
This is what I don't get. Okay. Because people bring this up like it means something. I want this person that texted this in, I want you to send a follow-up text and explain what this says about anything or proves. It says, as Eli holds up two rings he took from Brady. Yeah, that was awesome. It was really, really cool.
Right.
That was a long time ago.
2011 was the second
That
one.
Was 8 years ago.
Eight
like,
years.
Is Eli Manning supposed to have a starting job ad infinitum? Like, as long as he possibly wants it?
Well, sure,
because
was
he won
looking
a Super
that
Bowl
way.
In 2011?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And yet, somehow, that was enough to sustain Eli long past other, longer than it sustained Joe Montana. How long after Joe Montana's last Super Bowl did he end up in Kansas, or did he end
three,
up in Kansas
three
City?
Or 4 years.
Three or four
80,
years.
89, 80, I'll look it up, but 89 was when they beat the drums off of the Broncos, mm-hmm. 55-10. That was 1989. He was with the Chiefs by, I want to say, like 92 or 93.
Now it helps when they have Steve Young to replace him.
Yeah, but still, this was a guy who won four Super Bowls.
They moved on. They were making moves to move on to Steve Young well in advance.
Which is what
of
the Giants are doing
happen.
Now with Daniel
right.
Jones.
Now, but yeah. They should have been doing it 2 years
100%.
ago. 100%. They were drafting running backs instead of quarterbacks because they felt like Eli was going to. That was the strangest thing. As awesome as Saquon Barkley is, why are you drafting running backs? Why are you continuing to ignore the quarterback position as if your current quarterback last year was actually going to do something over the next couple of years? They were in extreme denial about where Eli was as a quarterback.
So 89 and 90 were, those are Montana's last 2 years. He was first team all pro both those years. And then did he get hurt? Because 91, he didn't play at all. He's like, he doesn't even have a, and then in 92, he played in one game.
Yeah.
So, and then they traded him to Kansas City.
That was
City
one of the big things was him coming back from the injury.
Yeah.
And him feeling like he was further along than Bill Walsh thought he was.
35 years old at that yeah. point. So Eli's in his late 30s now. So anyway, before we get to your film study on the Jags game, where do you come out on the Eli Hall of Fame argument?
I don't think he is.
Yeah,
I think
I
those
either.
Two Super okay, Bowls good. Were awesome, but people, if
you and
you're
I get along just fine.
And
then,
he had some great plays in there too, but then fine, give everybody on those two teams Super Bowl Hall of Fame status too, because there's nothing else about him other than like, he's a compiler. He compiled a bunch of passing yards.
Super durable.
He's eighth on the all-time passing list. He's got a 500 win-loss record. He's got a horrible touchdown to interception ratio for the modern NFL. And he just had a couple of great, playoff runs. And
he
can't take that away from him. That was awesome. This is what I would say. If Joe Flacco can somehow stumble his way into another Super Bowl, Joe Flacco's got a much better case for the Super Bowl, for the Hall of Fame than Eli Manning. If you just look at his numbers,
he's won a lot more football games.
He's won more. He's got a better touchdown interception ratio. He's won more football games. Like he's done a lot. He's probably got about the same touchdown interception ratio. And
I don't know, man. Eli's led the league a couple of times.
But what did Joe Flacco do in that one Super Bowl run?
He was incredible.
He took a team.
He was better than Eli.
A dominant team, but he had an incredible run through the playoffs. Which is what Eli's done a couple times.
I mean, Joe Flacco had an historic run. Like he went 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. He had a Montana-like run through the playoffs that year. He won a game on the road against the one seed in Denver that year.
I would say too that I keep seeing this argument. Well, look at some of the other quarterbacks that are there, like Joe Namath or Terry Bradshaw. I guess would probably be the name that comes up a lot. Terry Bradshaw had a much bigger tradition of winning than Eli did.
He won four Super Bowls in 6 years.
Yeah.
for one of the all-time great dynasties.
Somehow people stack up two Super Bowls as the equivalent of four Super Bowls, which, I don't want to get deep into the mathematics here. There's a 100% difference between those two.
Literally.
And then also just the absolute dominance throughout that whole stretch that the Steelers had.
Yeah. Here's my argument against Eli Manning when people bring up the Hall of Fame. I just don't think he's a very good quarterback. Like, my first criteria for somebody going into the Hall of Fame is that they're good at their job. Eli Manning's not a very good quarterback. He is an average at best quarterback who had two historic playoff runs. I'm not going to give somebody the ultimate individual accolade because they had two good weeks at work.
Yeah.
You know, like he had 15 very, very average to below average years. And two good weeks. Sorry, I know they were two really important weeks, but that's not enough. That doesn't fit the Hall of Fame for me.
Somebody says if Kurt Warner is a Hall of Famer, then Eli is. I never once thought Eli could hold Kurt Warner's jock for a moment.
No.
When would it be? Because Eli wasn't a late bloomer like Kurt Warner. Was it because Eli had an older brother that brought him a lot of notoriety very early on, and then
Kurt
Eli
Warner,
was a first-round pick.
Kurt Warner multiple seasons was in the conversation for the MVP of the and won an MVP
yeah.
for the MVP of the league. Eli Manning struggled to make Pro Bowls at a position where if you have a pulse and you just wait it out and let everybody bow out of the Pro Bowl, you'll go to the Pro Bowl.
I would say that if Eli were any other position other than quarterback, this wouldn't even be a discussion, right?
Correct.
Right? If you weren't considered one of the best at your position for multiple years, then nobody talks about
That's
you
right.
for the MVP. It's if somehow if a wide receiver wasn't one of the best players but ends up having a couple of great Super Bowls and gets Super Bowl MVP twice, then you don't talk about him in the Hall of Fame. So this is a Manning thing, and frankly, I find it un-American. What you're doing is allowing the aristocracy to rule because he's in the royal family of the NFL. And because he has more glittery jewelry than us lay people.
Spits in the face of equality.
It does, really. Yeah. If anything, what you are for is you're for the queen more than you are for the NFL.
Yeah, the aristocrats.
Yeah.
So you did, shifting gears here on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, you did a little film study yesterday.
Is Titus Howard a Hall of Famer? It was a rainy day
outside. They're 1-0 with him starting at left guard.
I think what you're asking is Titus Howard more, is he more of a candidate for the Hall of Fame than Eli Manning?
You just stole my 9 a.m. tease.
Yeah, my answer would be yes. Very clearly, yes, 100%, totally. Titus Howard deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
So what did you see, Seth Payne? What did you see?
I think for this, okay, for one, from this moment forward, you got to always just stop looking at these Pro Football Focus grades for offensive linemen. They grade them based on the TV copy 2 hours after the game. It's amazing because I read this write up after the game about Titus Howard, and it says, "Wow, he really struggled. He got a 40 out of 100 is the grade."
Wow, that's a terrible
score. And it's talking
about
how awful he was, and I thought, man, I didn't think so from watching it at first glance. So I watched the TV copy, and I still didn't think so. I thought Titus Howard had a pretty damn good game, other than for a few. He had a few big flubs, like rookie type mistakes.
Sure,
he is playing with a broken hand, by the way, or broken finger. So after watching the coach's film yesterday, Titus Howard had a very good first half. He had a second half that was marred by a couple of really unfortunate mistakes. One bad play, a couple of unfortunate mistakes.
The tripping penalty is what people will remember the most.
But in terms of, you're just going to grade him out and not worry about when the tripping penalty happened and how that killed the drive, I actually thought he did pretty well. I think there's a lot to be excited about with him, especially because he's a rookie playing with a broken finger. He's got that shocker cast on his hand, and that's really hard. That's really hard as an offensive lineman. So I was pleased with Titus Howard.
Is he the right tackle for this team by the end of the year, or is the shift from left guard to right tackle too much to throw on a rookie's plate in season?
I don't know exactly. And now I need to go back and watch Roderick Johnson more. Roderick had a couple tough snaps, but for the most part, I didn't dial in on him. For the most part, I was okay with him there. I guess the question becomes then, okay, you're going to move him to right tackle, and then so at left guard, you're going to...
Guess put Calamete back in?
Or you're moving Fulton left and Sharping right, or vice versa. Yeah. I don't have to see anybody out there as long as Roderick Johnson's playing right at right tackle.
Yeah,
I don't have
to
see Sharping out there anytime soon.
It probably depends more on Roderick Johnson than anything else.
Left guard is a very important position. Like, every single position on the field is a very important position. Nick Martin's got to stop messing up the snap count. That was another thing that bothered me, was that Titus Howard was marked down for that penalty that they called. They could have called the penalty on either Laremy Tunsil or Titus Howard, because they both left simultaneously, which leads me to believe we've still got more timing issues with the snap with Nick Martin. Nick Martin, because then in the same half, he also snapped the ball when nobody else was expecting him to snap the ball. Nick Martin's got to get that straightened out. You're the second highest paid center in the league. Get that straightened out. It's a damn snap.
Seth, I don't know if you know this, but the second that pen hit the paper on an $11 million year extension, it ceased being his fault.
He said FOH.
That's right.
Bill O'Brien's yelling at him about the snap count in practice.
He's like flossing his teeth with a $100 bill. What'd you say, coach? Lighting a cigar during a drill?
Otherwise, Nick Martin does have a lot on his plate in terms of calling out protections and everything. And you can see he was really active in this game doing all of that. I will say, as far as the offensive line goes, I was very, very, very pleased with how they handled all the things that I've criticized them for in the past. And Wade Smith pointed this out yesterday also. When the defensive line shifted right before the snap, the Texans' offensive line handled it extremely well. In the run game, they were physical. They were bullying at times. They moved with coordination amongst each other. It was a really, really good effort.
You mean like real NFL teams?
Yeah, like real NFL teams, right. But they did a good job.
Yeah.
There was another thing. Titus Howard had a snap in the second half where he looked like he took a wrong snap and he tripped Nick Martin up. So a few little rookie deals there that are going to happen. But overall, I was very pleased with how he played as a rookie.
I'm looking at your notes, and I'm seeing the name Cullen Gillespie.
Gillespie.
Well, actually, I'm not seeing Gillespie. I'm seeing Gilly.
That's right. I'm going to call him
Gilly.
I'm calling him Gilly.
Samwell.
Not Gilly from Game of Thrones.
Gilly. Maybe the most annoying character of all time.
She grew on me by the end.
She did?
Yeah. Unlike that Gilly, this Gilly needs no time to get used to.
Everybody
loves Gilly.
So you liked Gillespie? Did some good things. Huh?
He had a couple. Look,
how many snaps
he might have had more successful blocks downfield than Jay Prosh had an entire season. Jay Prosh looked so good in his pads. He looked so good in his pads, and yet he would routinely just whiff on people and fall off of them.
He had that shaved head, too, with his helmet was off, so he looked like a fullback.
Gillespie has
a beautiful set of flowing locks.
Looks like a Viking.
He was like glue
on linebackers. He had a couple good plays where he got out, and once on a linebacker, I think once on a safety or a backer, I can't remember. And there was another moment early in the game when Deshaun scrambled to the left, he really could have had Gillespie wide open over the middle. There's another time later in the game, too, where Gillespie was open as a potential dump-off. And that's something that's one little area that Deshaun, it's curious. He's advanced in a lot of ways in terms of the mental side of the game. He's almost got an aversion to dumping it off to a running back or a fullback. It, for some reason, when he's got somebody wide open over the middle, that's the one time where it almost feels like it's too easy money for him, because he's so good with pressure in his face. He's ridiculously good with pressure in his face, but sometimes, obviously, as we know, he just tempts fate a little too long.
So Gillespie only played three snaps on offense, but you noticed
he had two blocks on three snaps.
Yeah.
When they brought him in, they were going to use him. It's funny. I was actually, I can't remember if I said this on air or not. I don't want to say who I met. I met somebody that knows Gillespie before the game last week.
You mentioned that it was a certain relative.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. I was telling that relative.
Spawned him.
I was telling that relative that, hey, just from watching during training camp, man, they really want to use the fullback in this offense. It's just a matter of getting Gillespie on board. He played 1 year of it in college, and obviously, A&M's version of fullback is way different than an NFL version of fullback. He looked so much better blocking in this game than he did in week two of training camp.
That's encouraging.
That's very encouraging. He's come a long way from when they were first trying to integrate him. And as a receiver, we've seen this in the preseason. This is what you need in the modern NFL. It's awesome to have a fullback, but that fullback has to be a receiving threat. Gillespie is a receiving threat, so he's going to be involved more and more. I think whatever O'Brien saw of him on film offensively, he's got to be pleased with it. So
yeah.
I was very excited to see that.
That's good stuff right there.
So that adds a whole new element to what you can do offensively.
No doubt. All right. Apparently the Texans have a kangaroo court system.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.